life is more important than work. So some of those little things are what was why I wanted to create this. Realizing that I was spending an hour with my kids a day and I was missing games and I was missing so much from my older son. Maybe some people may look at me and say, well, that's not success. You could be so much bigger and better if you didn't do that. But I have a 19-year-old in college. It's cliche to say, but it goes fast. I have plenty of time to work after my kids are out of the house if I want to do that and try to compete with some of those bigger companies. But success is not always about how much revenue your company generates. I think it goes back to what makes you happy and what is successful for what your life should look like.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Kim in Santa. Like banana. I like whispering it. I don't know. Maybe I've been watching Jim Gaffigan lately. That could be it. She is the founder of Always On Digital, LLC, in case you're wondering about her tax status. And she is a multi-million dollar business owner, digital marketing expert, wife, and mother of four boys. That's a lot of energy. As the founder of Always On Digital, she helps leading brands reach the masses through dynamic digital campaigns that generate consumer interaction and sales so they can scale. Oh my gosh, marketing doing its job. What a novel idea. Love it. Top brands lean on Kim's expertise, including Infamil, Wingstop, and the Texas Rangers, and Johnston and Murphy. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you, Kenny, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm excited about this. And for if you're just listening on a like an audio only platform, you are missing out on the majesty that is the painting behind Kim of just a fully righteous Betty White.
Yes.
Right?
In a track.
So there you go. I think we should just make that like the instead of your photo, we're going to like clip that out and put it. And people are going to like, did Kenny interview Betty White?
I'm fine with it. I'm all for it. She's better dressed than me, so.
Hey, and better dressed than me, too. I would look weird in that. Kim, I'm excited to have this conversation. Tell me today what is on your mind.
Well, the first thing that's usually on my mind is what's for dinner, because I think that's our, you know, the lifelong struggle that we always have, right? What shall we make for dinner today? But my real question that probably keeps me up at night is, you know, am I doing as much as I can for our team? And I wake up and think, you know, do we have the right process in place? Do we have the right products to sell? Are we, you know, doing all we can from a marketing standpoint? And just kind of, am I doing the right things that need to be done? And should I be doing more? And could I be doing more? And so I always struggle with that, you know, trying to be a better version of myself and making sure that we don't kind of just sleep on it and say, okay, this is good enough. You know, just thinking, what is it that I could be, you know, doing better and things like that.
Gotcha. And I think that's a common struggle for a lot of high achievers. And I'd be curious your take, because I've been thinking about this and was even talking to one of my coaches that works with me this year about this yesterday. And I'd be curious, how does that feel more like a drive towards excellence or more like anxiety of being left behind?
I think it drives me more towards excellence. I've learned to not worry about what others are doing as much, in the sense that we started this business and I came out of a corporation that was much bigger than we are now. I know not only can I not compete with them, but I don't want to compete with them. And it's, you know, not knocking what those folks are doing, and they're doing great work, but in order to have that level of business, that size company and all of that, it would change the structure of what I have for my own life. And that's not what I'm seeking. And so by not allowing the competition to kind of get in my way, I look at it as for more towards, you know, achievement and excellence versus being left behind. Because I know we're not, I don't want to say we are behind already, but we're in different lanes and we're looking at a whole different ballgame. It's not the same.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And it's refreshing to hear someone say, look, I'm not looking to really scale. I love growth, but I'm not looking to scale and become all that, just because there is a fundamental shift. I don't think people see that or even respect the demand that would take and the changes and the sacrifices, like what you've said. It's just, we could, but it would demand sacrifices I'm not willing to make. Yes. And so I'm choosing to do well where I am. So it sounds more like you're not competing against those in the marketplace. You're competing against what you and your team are capable of. It's just, what's my highest and best output and performance? Was I living up to that versus what is somebody else doing? And did they pass me up and get this account and pull this thing off?
Exactly. And I think because we try to be so mission-based, I want to make sure that we're fulfilling that promise. And we're saying, mm-hmm. If we want to hire these folks and give them these opportunities, are we doing everything on the back end that needs to be done to do that? And where we do want growth is being able to hire more of those folks and grow along those lines. So are we doing, the A, the B, the C, or whatever it is to get there and, mm-hmm. and have that path? Because I don't want to be fake. I don't want to say, oh, we're doing these things and not doing these things. And we're, we put right. this out there and we want to make sure that, we're backing it up and we're doing that.
Right. Like a lot of smaller businesses and organizations try to inflate their size yeah. through marketing tactics, mm-hmm. things like that, like calling yourself the CEO and you don't have any employees, which I was like, what are you the chief of?
Yeah.
Apart from everything, you're the chief everything officer, but not of executives. One thing I did hear in your opening answer was, wanting to do maybe like, I want to be better than I was yesterday. Mm-hmm. Just there's always room for growth. Not resting on yesterday's success, but can you talk about how you see the difference between being complacent, like, hey, we've been successful, therefore we always will be, which we both know is a lie, mm-hmm. and then being content? Because I hear both coming from you, but mm-hmm. I think they can feel so similar to people mm-hmm. that they can't tease them apart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes with the same value as we teach our children, right? You're not going to be able to have everything that everyone else has, and you have to be happy with what you have to some extent. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't want more for yourself, but, I have middle schoolers that are at the phase where other kids have all the social medias. My children don't. They have all the newest shoes, or maybe they have these fancy cars. And I say, you have to understand that sometimes you're going to have maybe 3 of the 5 of those things in your life. And you have to be, happy and content with the things you mm-hmm. you have and you've earned. And you should always strive for more, but you can't live your whole life just thinking, I have nothing, or I don't have everything that everybody else has, because right. you're going to be miserable. Now, going back right. to being complacent, I think that comes in more of where you say, to your point, we generated a lot of business. This is great. And I actually did make this joke earlier, like 20 minutes ago, to my husband, because I don't close a lot of deals. I spend my time doing a bunch of different things sometimes, so I don't always have the opportunity to have some sales opportunities. But I have a couple that are pending, and I made a joke to my husband that, oh, if I close this, I'm going to put my feet up because I hit my goal for the year. And he said, what's your goal? And I said, it doesn't matter. I don't have a goal, but I hit it, as a joke, yeah. obviously. So we're not going to be complacent and say, I closed a deal and now we don't have to worry about achieving more of that after the year. And I have a sales background, so I fully understand how quickly your biggest client can disappear and how you always need to fill mm-hmm. the pipe to have more. And I think that's where complacency comes into play for me, is that I don't have that in my DNA, because I've always been in a pretty much, even with your own business, you're in a sales role where in order to survive, you need to keep going and keep bringing more right. in. And you can't just say, we've done well in the past and we'll continue to. I think there's luck that plays into it, relationships that certainly play into it, and you can foster those. And maybe from the outside, people think you're complacent, but you're just doing something different than maybe making 1,000 cold calls a day, if that's even
possible. Right. That's really good. And so what helps you understand, like you said, sometimes you are doing sales, but you've built a mm-hmm. team, so you don't have to do all mm-hmm. of them. There are those seasons or cycles where it feels like I'm heads down, I'm making the thing better, and then I'm making the thing bigger. Mm-hmm. And then, now I'm refining, now I'm like pounding the pavement. But, and at first, I'll just speak from my own experience. At first, I'll be really encouraged, like, yes, I've got my focus. I'm focused on me and what are my goals and what does my success look like? And then I'm good. And then I'll pop on social media or talk to a fellow business owner or friend. And they're like, we're hitting it hard and we're doing this. And I'm like, oh, maybe I should be doing that instead of staying within my own rhythms.
Yeah.
It's so tempting to get caught up in whoever's moving the fastest or, you know, the hardest, you know, and is having their moment, not really looking at all the preparation maybe that went into that time. Like, you may be reaping a harvest for, you know, a month that's really, really good, but there was like 6-9 months that led into that that we may never see. What helps you stay grounded in the cycles, the rhythms, the seasons, whatever the, you know, your term of preference is for you and always on, especially when you see other agencies who, especially right now with AI and some other tools that are coming out, really trying to push hard? Because I think that that's a difficult balance for most leaders I come across, even seasoned ones.
Yeah, it is. And we all fall prey to it, I think, to some extent, where you're in your own lane and you have your head down and you're doing all the things that you know will help your business. And then you pop on LinkedIn and you see someone at some conference with all these potential clients that you would like to have as well, and think, oh, man, I missed the boat. I should have been there. I should have done this. And it's very easy to fall prey to that. And I think for me, it happens more in two areas. One, should I have been at that thing? Should I have been at that thing if it's a conference or an event? And, you know, or was my time better spent here? Where's the cost of my time more valued? And sometimes we have to like check ourselves and say, you know what? I've gone to that conference 2 years in a row and the ROI wasn't the same as me, you know, sitting here and just making calls or reaching out to folks or having conversations. Like, that has benefited us more. On social media, it doesn't look like it benefits you more because look how much fun everyone's having. We fall prey to that, you know, and then so that's obviously one part of kind of watching what people are doing. The other part that I do fall prey to sometimes is new technologies, like you mentioned, maybe AI or whatever. Are we behind because we are siloed off? You know, we are in our own space. I am not part of a large company with 2,000 people where we have somebody just looking through the trees and new technologies and things that we should be doing. And should we be thinking of, you know, this new platform or how do you even hear about that new platform? So sometimes I do, that messes with me a little bit. And I found the solution to that is really just making sure that I constantly have conversations with those in the industry that help, where we share, you know, education, you know, whether it be some type of group of women or, you know, women business owners or something like that, where we're sharing knowledge of what we're hearing and, you know, keeping each other in the loop. And I think that also helps with kind of what you see. And to your point, any success that you see in these posts and whatever it is, how they're talking about their company, there's so much that happens behind that, you know, that you don't see. It's the foundation of your house. It's the framing of your house. It's very easy to walk into a finished product and say, wow, that looks great, but you don't see the hard work and blood, sweat, and tears that goes into it sometimes.
Right. It's like the sayings, like you can work really hard for 20 years and then suddenly you're an overnight success.
Yep.
Nobody saw the 20 years, but they saw the, you know, whenever you hit your moment of in the sun or moment of prominence or something like that. And, you know, and those are great. But, you know, maybe won't last forever. Being that you have worked with so many top brands, you're in a category of entrepreneur by surpassing, you know, the $1 million mark and being in business for so long that you're in a small sliver of entrepreneurs, at least as far as the U.S. is concerned. What in what we're talking about has helped you with the consistency? Because I think a lot of visionaries, right? You have to be, you know, visionaries are there at the beginning and then we start adding some other styles. They can be, you know, they can value intensity over consistency, but that's not typically what wins the day in the long term. So what have been some of your strategies or even just lessons that you've had to learn for yourself to make sure that you could keep up a healthy pace?
I think we definitely have peaks and valleys for our pace. It is not, I want to say there is a consistent baseline, but there's definitely seasons where I put more into it than others. And those seasons usually match where my kids are in their life. So for instance, in the summer, if I'm spending more time going on vacations with them and other things, I'm stepping back more than I do during the, you know, the year when they're in school. And so that pattern definitely follows. There always has to be a baseline, because if there's not a baseline, things are not going to come in and things could fall off the wheels could fall off real fast. But that really is kind of the cadence to which, you know, we keep this consistency. And, you know, I grew up, my dad was one of those people that he worked for New York City in New York City Housing, and he started in maintenance. So like the lowest you can start, the first bottom job you can get. And he ended his career of many years up as like a supervisor, and he kind of worked the ranks. And what he did was he would study, there would be an exam, he would take the exam, he would pass, get a promotion, and just kind of just took those steps. He's quiet, pretty quiet man, kept his head down and just did it. And I've always just admired his work ethic and thought that's the way things should be done. And every job that I had, I always applied the same thought process where you kind of just do the thing, you know, one step forward, you study, put your head down, and you be consistent. And that's where success comes from.
Yeah. Which again, like you said, you may have some peaks and valleys, but overall, you do need to make sure there's some semblance of basis. You're not saying, hey, get rid of all the peaks and valleys. They're going to happen, but we need to be floating back to this middle. I want to go back to what you're saying about so much of your rhythm following, like where your kids are at in school during the school year. And then also, you know, I'm a father of five from 15 down to 3.5 right now as of the recording. But, you know, the elementary school is very different from middle school, very different from high school in terms of demands and opportunities. I could imagine someone listening and going, well, that's cool and all, but like my market is doing these things and has these rhythms, and I've got to push through, and I got to see, you know, I got to carpe the diem, right? Seize the carp. By the way, I know it's not actually seize the carp. Please don't email me. Or if you're going to, we'll have Kim's email in the show notes. Yeah. But I think there's a lot of people who would say, well, that's a recipe for playing it small and not, you know, reaching the heights of your excellence. That's, you have a lifestyle business. It's not even a real business or something like that, to where there's a narrative that pushes back against it, whether they've absorbed it or it's been explicitly taught to them. But clearly your results speak for themselves in leaning into that. What led you to lean into that? Because that was a choice. You didn't have to. You could have just worked straight through and missed vacations and baseball games and all sorts of things. And there are a lot of people who do. But given that you had a choice, what helped you make that choice and stick with it? Even, and I'm sure you've made this choice even in the face of, we're not performing at our best, but I'm still going to go over here and be with my kids or lean into the season of life that they're in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes it's not necessarily one big moment that causes it for you, but lots of little bits and pieces along the way that put these ideas in your head of, this is the way I want my life to be. And it's not necessarily overnight. I was in radio. I had an after school job at a radio rep firm, and they had women that did job shares where they were, this is pre laptops, pre cell phones. And they had two women or groups of women that, you know, they were in pairs, and they would each work 3 days a week. And what they would do is, you know, they were salespeople, and they ended up being extremely successful because they each had this hybrid lifestyle. They were happy and they communicated, you know, with each other on phone, you know, like they would call each other, go over what the business was, kind of tag team. And every place that I went, I always said like, oh, could we do this? Like once I start having kids, and people were like, no, that doesn't exist. Like that's not going to happen. Right. You tried for, you know, working from home a little bit. And so like all these little things started to, you know, appear to me and when I had my third, really what happened was I had a miscarriage at work. And I was supposed to travel for 2 weeks straight after. And I had a wonderful boss. Who pulled me aside and was like, you don't have to do this one trip. I ended up having to do the sales conference. It was a big deal because I was, a sales leader. I needed to be there for that. But, you know, it's like life is more important than work. And, you know, so some of those little things are what was why, you know, were my why of why I wanted to create this. Realizing that I was spending an hour with my kids a day and what's the point of having them if you're not going to be with them. And I was missing games and I was missing so much from my older son. And, you know, maybe some people may look at me and say, well, that's not success. And you could be so much bigger and better if you, you know, didn't do that. But I have a 19-year-old in college and, you know, it's cliche to say, but it goes fast. I have plenty of time to work after my kids are out of the house and if I want to do that and try to compete with some of those bigger companies. But success is not always about how much revenue your company generates. I think it goes back to what makes you happy and what is successful for what your life should look like. And honestly, I think, look, you have to have enough money, obviously, to be able to do all those things. But I was forgoing things. And maybe I could buy more expensive stuff, but that doesn't always lead to happiness because time is something you can't get more of.
Right. I love the saying of the days are long, but the years are short. Cause it feels like I'm accelerating towards, you know, like all of my kids, my older four just graduating. And, you know, I've worked a ton. I've tried to be at a lot of those events, but there's been times when I've been like, all right, and I got to go and cut out early and things like that. And it is always that push like, well, I'm working for my family, but sometimes that's meant sacrificing being with them. And that's a real hard tug of war for self-starters driven entrepreneurs. Like we have a motor, an engine inside of us that can be really hard to explain to those that maybe don't feel that or experience that. And it's not, you know, better or worse. Mm-hmm. It's just a difference in our, in the way that God wired us. So it would sound like getting really clear away from work on what does a success mean for Kim?
Mm-hmm.
Just what do I value, right? Like Patrick Lencioni has that famous line about values when properly practiced inflict pain. And I'm curious, did you already have core values for yourself? It's easy to do them for your business because everybody and their dog tells you to do it. But did you already have like a written down, like these are our core values or maybe our family's core values and our definition of success? If so, what did you go through to create those? And if not, was that a crystallizing moment for you to step into that?
I think we have had them probably more verbally than written down. I know that there's been times where we put signs on the walls that have talked about values, which, you know, always come into play with, you know, honesty and, you know, working hard and doing the right thing. And, you know, from a personal standpoint, doing your best. I have a lot of athlete children. So it is ingrained in them, you know, the travel sports about putting the work in, putting the extra 15 minutes a day, what does that equate in a year? And so all of those life values, I mean, I wish they would apply more of it to, you know, finishing that basket of laundry or, you know, maybe wiping down the bathroom a little better. You know, there's probably some of those values aren't necessarily hitting home, but you know, maybe not finishing that book as much as it applies to sports. But, you know, those are things that we say all the time. You know, when I was younger, first having kids, I was thinking, what are my kids going to say about me? What have I taught them that they'll know, you know, what is my legacy as a person? Obviously, you want them to be proud of the work you do for your business, right? You always want your kids to think you're cool and that you're successful in some way. You want them to be proud of you just as much they want you to be proud of them. But what are the things that I'm going to teach them that they're going to remember? Like, what are those sayings? You know, what are the sayings my grandmother used to say? Like, I want to know what my legacy is to my kids. So I think I've been more purposeful about trying to, I don't know, say things that, you know, show these values to make them think or, you know, feel them. And sometimes, you know, you may think that they don't hear you, but then they go and do something that surprises you and shows their character. And then you say, okay, so they were listening. Like, they're not going to admit they were listening, but they were. And they are starting to have these same values. And that is what, so maybe they're not necessarily written down, and maybe I should write more of that down, but I think we talk about it enough and, you know, make these statements so that they start to feel it and think it for themselves that that's how they should proceed forward.
I love that. Yeah. I've had a few of those moments recently where, you know, our oldest boy, and it really is a gift to live with someone who knows everything.
Yeah.
So cool. Like, I don't need ChatGPT. Yeah. I've got my son Isaac. But all teasing aside, you know, sometimes I'd wonder just because he could have a little bit of an attitude. Yeah. I don't know where he gets it from. But, you know, we have a kid at church who's on the spectrum and doesn't always do well in large gatherings on Sunday mornings and sometimes has to sit outside. And I was looking around. I was like, I couldn't find my son after, you know, a few minutes because they sit with the youth. Well, he went outside and he sat with that kid for the entirety of the time and talked with them. And his mom came up and just said, like, thank you so much. Like, it really is hard. And, you know, she's a single mom and she's like, I come here because I need to connect with other adults and I want to worship and I want to, you know, experience, you know, my faith in this way. And sometimes that's hard when I feel like he always needs me. And so it was one of those moments like, okay, he's catching more than he's letting on, or like you said, whatever, admit. He'll probably end up saying like what I did, which is, once I left the house and I was in college and getting a job, my dad got way smarter. Yeah. I don't know what it was. I think he took a vitamin.
Yeah, they definitely got smarter.
So I love that. And being able to show them that you're living your principles, as one of my pastors would tell us quite often around parenting, is, and I think it applies to all leadership, not just parenting, is more is caught than taught. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
How has making these changes around defining your own success, what it means to have a successful family and interact those things, how has that changed the way in which you lead your team, the people around you? You know, some people feel like borrowing, you know, lessons learned in parenting into leadership is somehow patronizing. I don't find that to be the case, but some do. But how have those decisions changed your leadership?
So it's funny you bring up the parenting thing, because I actually use that example a lot. And I led people prior to this. And one thing that I was always passionate about was leading people in the way that works for them and what drives them and really understanding them. And that was before I had as many kids. I really wasn't that, I don't want to say I was not that much of a parent, but when you have four kids, when I had one kid, it was a different parent than I am now. And I had, you know, we were a sales organization and there were times where they wanted us to try to bring in an extra couple $100,000 at the end of the quarter. And they would say, oh, well, incentivize people with a gift card or $100 to the first person that does this. And I had said to my manager, like, I can't give money to everybody because not everyone's driven by money. That's not what matters. And I asked one of the guys on my team, what would it take to get, you know, what could I give you that you would be able to bring in $100,000? Like, what would you want? And he says, I want to leave at 4:30. Because his ride was an hour and a half. I want to leave at 4:30. I said, okay, you can leave at 4:30 if you close $100,000. He made one phone call. He closed that deal because he wanted to leave at 4:30. That's what mattered to him. And after that, the company did not really want to do that, which was crazy to me because $100 was way more money than letting him leave an hour and a half early. Like, what's the cost of that? Just let him leave. Because if some client is reaching out to him in his commute home, he's going to respond because he wants to continue to succeed. So that we give him things like letting him leave at 4:30. So I take those same lessons, you know, like I said, it's not one thing necessarily that we've learned. It's the big bits and pieces and that we take along the way to create. And it's the same idea to me here, that people have if they, you can create something that they are happy and they feel fulfilled in their own life, they will repay you, you know, tenfold with the work that they do for you. And I'm not saying I'm asking them to work, you know, 12-hour days or anything, but they are committed to making sure that this thing works because it provides something for them. And even though some of our folks don't work full days, one of them said to, you know, one person said to me not recently, she said it was the best job she's ever had. This is the best job because it allows her to have her personal life taken care of without work fear, as well as, you know, be fulfilled in her career. And so leading people is really, I don't want to say it's simple and I'm not, you know, making a mockery of it, but it's really doing the same idea. Our kids respond differently and so do people. And if you can figure out the thing that helps them, you know, what drives them and what helps them succeed and feel, you know, content, and then just working with them on that, that, you know, lets you go miles. We hired somebody new. Yesterday was his first day and he's on the West Coast and he was telling me that he was sitting in traffic driving his daughter to daycare. And he said when he was at his old job, he would have been sweating and panicking that he could potentially be late. And he said, I actually felt like you would understand. And he said, I sat in the car thinking, Kim would understand this, you know, that this is life and it happens sometimes and you're in more traffic than you anticipate. And he said, not that I'm necessarily going to be late, but just the fear that I could be late and what would happen and what are those consequences. And no one should really feel like that at work. Unless it's, you know, obviously some big meeting or something that, you know, with a client. But for the most part, you can call somebody in your car. You know, we have all these tools.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like to me, not only have you led yourself and your family with values, but you're also leading people through their own values, which I think is fantastic. It's sometimes more time consuming because you can't just like blanket it, you know, do the same thing for everybody and throw money at the problem or at the incentive. But the long-term benefits, like you said, the ROI that you're going to get back from really giving people what they value instead of just things you think are valuable can make a huge difference. If there's a leader listening that, and I'm not questioning whether anybody's listening, that's what that sounded like to me. Like if anyone happens to listen to this at any point, that's not what I'm saying. But let's say that there is a leader who maybe he or she is been really wrestling with, you know, establishing their own values and measurements of success or leading others. And maybe they're newer to leadership or they're just like, I don't know how to motivate this one person. They're my kryptonite. What's a baby step they could take in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money to move more towards a values-based leadership style?
So I would say two things. The first thing is if you do have somebody that is your kryptonite, maybe spend some time with them. You know, go for a walk, talk to them more, find out, you know, talk to them about anything but work. How are they doing, you know, as a person, challenges that they're facing, any kind of conversation. I think when we act human, we get more human responses and that does help in our leadership. But then if you are struggling and trying to figure out anything, whatever it is that's on your plate, step back, get yourself out of it. Step away, walk outside, go sit at the beach for an hour or two, whatever you can squeeze out of your time. I find that I think so much in the shower and all these ideas come to my head, like something I may be struggling with the night before. And then I wake up in the morning, I take a shower. I'm like, oh, it came to me like a light bulb. And the reason is because there's nothing else happening. There's no music. There's no distractions. There's no doorbell. Like everything is escaped at that point. And so I'm not saying you should run your water bill up and just, you know, hang out in your shower, but go on a walk, go somewhere, go sit in a park somewhere for a little while with a notebook and just start writing and write your thoughts and, you know, and maybe it'll take you in a direction where the light bulb goes off for you of, you know, what's holding you back or what do you even want to do with your life? You know, sometimes just stopping and thinking, we're so consumed with our phones and devices and what everybody else is doing that sometimes we're not even allowing ourselves to think enough about what we want.
Yeah. Yeah, we're so busy that we're not slowing down enough to think. Because to be honest, busyness feels good.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm making things happen. Absolutely. But it may be activity and not progress. So I love that. If people want to know more about you, more about Always On Digital or anything else, where should they connect? What should they click on? And we'll have links in the show notes for this, but where would you direct them?
So they can email me, kim@getawayson.com. Not about seizing carpe. Not carpe
seizing
day.
The carp.
Seizing the carp. Not yeah. allowed to do that.
Yeah. But if you have some fish recipes.
Exactly. It's Kim, kym@getawayson.com. Or you can go to our website, which is getawayson.com. And I'm on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. We'll have all of that linked in the show notes. Kim, thanks so much for spending some time with me and the listeners and sharing your wisdom and your insights. We're better for it. Hope to have you on again in the future, and we'll crack open some other new topics, maybe different than carp.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to be stuck on. And I'm getting really hungry because it's lunchtime for me. But thank you so much. And to our listeners, thank you so much for sticking around. I know you have many options when listening to podcasts, so we thank you for flying How Leaders Think. And if you would do me and the other listeners and people who would benefit from this content a kindness, like, rate, review, subscribe, leave a comment. Let me know what sorts of conversations you want. Do you want more conversations like the one you just listened to? Do you want less of them? I don't think you do, but you know what? It's your world. I'm just living in it. But your interactions with the content gets this in front of more people like you who are just trying to take their next step in leadership. And I think that's a free and easy way to pay it forward. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the world.